This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Podcast of Audio Reading Service volunteers reading the Journal Gazette is provided by the Allen County Public Library for the sight and print impaired and made available with the permission and cooperation of the Journal Gazette.
Thank you for joining us. I'm Jennifer with
Stuart.
For the next 2 hours, we will be reading selections from the Friday, September 12, Fort Wayne Journal Gazette, copyright 2025. We'll begin with the news for the first hour and then take a short break. When we come back from the break, we'll read obituaries, then a number of features from the Weekender section. After that, we'll read from the perspective section, including letters to the editor and editorials. After editorials, we'll read the TV listings, sports, and birthday announcements. The headlines from the front page of the Friday, September 12 Journal Gazette are: Photos show suspect in Kirk slaying. A horror beyond words. Local leaders share views. 24 years later, emotions still running deep for survivors. Now here's Stuart with the first article.
24 years later, emotions still running deep for survivors. By the Associated Press, Dateline, New York. Nearly a quarter century has passed since the September 11, 2001 attacks, but for many, the emotions of the day remain raw as ever. On Thursday, America marked the 24th anniversary of the deadly attacks with solemn ceremonies in New York, at the Pentagon, and in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. The commemorations were punctuated by moments of silence, the tolling of bells, and the reading of the names of the nearly 3,000 killed. Even 24 years later, it's heart-wrenching, said Jennifer Nielsen, who wore a T-shirt emblazed with the image of her husband, Troy Nielsen, as she attended the commemoration at Ground Zero in Lower Manhattan. It feels the same way every year. Michelle Pizzo, wearing a shirt with the image of her late husband, Jason DiFrazio, said she hoped more people could take a minute to reflect on the day. Younger kids don't realize that you have to remember, she said. Emma Williamson, 20, of Massachusetts, made a point to travel from her college uptown to stand near Ground Zero, where two memorial pools ringed by waterfalls and parapets inscribed with the names of the dead mark the spots where the Twin Towers once stood. I wasn't born when it happened, but it was really an important day in America, she said. It's kind of the last time we all stuck together, and that matters. The 9/11 anniversary, often promoted as a day of national unity, came during a time of increased political tension. The assassination of conservative activist Charlie Kirk at a Utah college a day earlier prompted additional security measures at Ground Zero, where FBI Director Kash Patel was among the dignitaries in attendance. Vice President J.D. Vance and his wife, Second Lady Usha Vance, had planned to attend but instead flew to Salt Lake City to visit with Kirk's family. Kirk's casket was then taken to his home state of Arizona aboard Air Force Two. Many in the crowd at Ground Zero held up photos of lost ones as a moment of silence marked the exact time when the first hijacked plane struck the iconic Twin Towers. Loved ones then read aloud the names of the victims, with many giving personal remembrances, well wishes, and updates on their lives. Zoe Doyle, daughter of Frank Joseph Doyle, said her family created a nonprofit in his honor that's built schools in South Africa and is feeding and educating thousands of children. Manuel DeMota Jr. said he remembers his father and namesake, Manuel DeMota, not just with grief, but with gratitude for the example he set. In a world filled with division and conflict, I do my best to honor my father by choosing connection, empathy, and hope, he said. Melissa Pullis, whose husband Edward Pullis died in the towers, said this year is more difficult than others because two of the couple's three children are getting married. You can't walk your princess down the aisle, she said through tears. You are missed every day. We will always say your name. We will always fight for justice. In a related article entitled Pentagon in Pennsylvania, at the Pentagon in Virginia, the 184 service members and civilians killed when hijackers steered a jetliner into the headquarters of the U.S. military were honored in a ceremony attended by President Donald Trump and First Lady Melania Trump. The president, in his remarks, recounted moments from that day, including snippets of conversations from passengers who were aboard the hijacked airplanes. Today, as one nation, we renew our sacred vow that we will never forget September 11, 2001, Trump said during the observance, which took place in an internal courtyard of the building rather than its traditional location outside its walls near the building's 9/11 memorial. The enemy will always fail, he added. We defy the fear, endure the flames. The president, who attended a New York Yankees game in the Bronx on Thursday evening, also announced Kirk would be posthumously awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom, calling him a giant of his generation and a champion of liberty. And in a rural field near Shanksville, Pennsylvania, a ceremony attended by Veterans Affairs Secretary Doug Collins honored the victims of Flight 93, the hijacked plane that crashed after crew members and passengers tried to storm the cockpit.
Photos show suspect in Kirk slaying. $100,000 reward for info, rifle recovered in woods. From the Associated Press, Stateline, Orem, Utah. The shooter who assassinated conservative activist Charlie Kirk and then vanished off a roof and into the woods remained at large more than 24 hours later, Thursday, as federal investigators appealed for the public's help by releasing a pair of photos of the person believed responsible. Investigators obtained clues, including a palm print, a shoe impression, and a high-powered hunting rifle found in a wooded area along the path the shooter fled. But they had yet to name a suspect or cite a motive in the killing they were treating as the latest act of political violence to convulse the United States across the ideological spectrum. The photos of a person in a hat, sunglasses, and a long-sleeve black shirt, as well as a $100,000 reward for information leading to an arrest, suggested that law enforcement thought tips from the public might be needed to crack the case. Two people who were taken into custody shortly after Wednesday's shooting at Utah Valley University were later released, forcing officials to chase new leads on a separate person of interest they pursued Thursday. One clue was a Mauser 30 caliber bolt action rifle found in a towel in the woods. A spent cartridge was recovered from the chamber, and three other rounds were loaded in the magazine, according to information circulated among law enforcement and described to the Associated Press. The weapon and ammunition were being analyzed by law enforcement at a federal lab. The attack, carried out in a broad daylight as Kirk spoke about social issues from a university courtyard, was captured on grisly videos that spread on social media. The shooter, who investigators believe blended into the campus crowd because of a college-age appearance, fired a single shot from the rooftop where they were perched before jumping off. Trump, who was joined by Democrats in condemning the violence, said he would award Kirk the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest civilian honor in the U.S., while Vice President J.D. Vance and his wife Usha arrived Thursday afternoon in Salt Lake City to visit with Kirk's family. Vance posted a remembrance on X chronicling their friendship dating back to initial messages in 2017 through Vance's Senate run and ultimately praying after hearing of the shooting. So much of the success we've had in this administration traces directly to Charlie's ability to organize and convene, Vance wrote. He didn't just help us win in 2024, he helped us staff the entire government. Kirk's casket was to be flown aboard Air Force Two from Utah to Arizona, where his nonprofit political youth organization, Turning Point USA, is based. Trump told reporters he plans to attend Kirk's funeral. Details have not been announced. Kirk was a conservative firebrand and provocateur who became a powerful political force among young Republicans and was a fixture on college campuses, where he invited sometimes vehement debate on social issues. He was shot while attending one such event Wednesday, a debate hosted by Turning Point at the Sorenson Center on campus in what was billed as the first stop on Kirk's American Comeback Tour. The event generated a polarizing campus reaction. An online petition calling for university administrators to bar Kirk from appearing received nearly 1,000 signatures. The university issued a statement last week citing First Amendment rights and affirming its commitment to free speech, intellectual inquiry, and constructive dialogue. Last week, Kirk posted on X images of news clips showing his visit was sparking controversy. He wrote, "What's going on in Utah?" One such provocative exchange played out immediately before the shooting as he was taking questions from an audience member about gun violence when the shot was heard.
A horror beyond words. Local leaders share views. By Lisa Green of the Journal Gazette. Fort Wayne area leaders joined countless others who have expressed shock and condemned violence that could be politically motivated after conservative activist Charlie Kirk was shot on a college campus. The Wednesday slaying of Kirk on the Utah Valley University campus in Orem occurred as a 31-year-old was addressing a crowd and taking questions about gun violence and mass shootings. Charlie was the most outspoken defender of free speech and open debate of his generation, and to see him gunned down for his speech is a horror beyond words, a statement from Lana Kiesling, chairwoman of the Indiana Republican State Committee, said Thursday. Kiesling, who is also clerk for the city of Fort Wayne, said she was deeply shaken by the horrific footage and news of Kirk's death from gun violence. "There is no excuse," she said through an emailed statement, "for such an act of evil." Kirk was the founder and CEO of the youth organization Turning Point USA and considered an ally to President Donald Trump. The organization's website includes a statement expressing sympathy for Kirk's wife and two children and memorializing his commitment to being outspoken on his views. Kirk was no stranger to threats, the website said, even though he had received thousands throughout his life. Kiesling and Kirk will be remembered as champion of the values we hold sacred. She also hopes for quick justice in his slaying. Allen County GOP Chairman Steve Schein also reflected Thursday on the attack with a public statement. "Charlie Kirk died doing something that every American should rejoice in, celebrate, and engage in every day. He died exchanging in a free exchange of ideas," Schein said. "America was founded by people who agree on little other than the concept of the nation they wanted to build. They dreamt of a nation in which freedom reigned, ideas were sacred, and discourse was not only welcomed but also wanted by all," he said. "America isn't always a neat and tidy concept. That is why it is great." Schein said individuals can argue based on varying perspectives of an issue, but should then move forward in a way that benefits all of us. "America," Schein said, "is the envy of the world because we have done that for 250 years. Charlie Kirk not only believed this, but also he lived it every day." The GOP chairman from Wells County shared similar sentiments. "I am heartbroken and devastated by the news of Charlie Kirk's passing. As a young conservative, I looked up to Charlie. His courage, passion, and willingness to boldly speak the truth inspired me and countless others to get involved, stand firm, and lead," Preston T. Wright said in a statement hours after Wednesday's shooting became top headline news. "The fact that Charlie's life was taken by an act of violence is beyond tragic," Wright said. "Political violence has no place in our country. We can disagree on ideas, but we must never allow hatred to lead to such senseless loss. Governor Mike Braun has ordered flags to be flown at half staff at state facilities, and he asked residents and businesses to join. The order, in remembrance of Kirk, will remain throughout Sunset Sunday, a news release said. Other state officials commenting on Kirk's death included Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita and the head of the state's Libertarian Party. Rokita said in a video message distributed Thursday that Kirk's detractors could not defend him in a debate with words, so a force of evil took him out with a bullet. He encouraged others to pick up the baton Kirk carried. Evan McMahon, the Libertarian Party of Indiana chairman, extended condolences late Wednesday night to Kirk's family with a statement. Charlie Kirk was a fierce advocate for his beliefs and a relentless participant in the marketplace of ideas. While we often disagreed with his conclusions and his methods, we respected his commitment to public engagement and the belief that ideas should be debated openly, not silenced with violence, McMahon said through email. His murder is a tragic reminder of the increasing threat of political violence in our society, an unacceptable trend that must be confronted with unity, resolve, and a shared dedication to peaceful dialogue.
We have three photos to share with you today from the newspaper. All are related to remembering September 11. Fort Wayne residents gathered to remember September 11 with a walk through Promenade Park after a ceremony at the Law Enforcement Firefighters Memorial on North Wells. Many of the participants are wearing red, white, and blue clothing. The day appears to be warm and sunny, much like September 11, 24 years ago. Michael Patmore holds an American flag while leading the group walking in Promenade Park. In another photo, there are several community members standing and appear to be reflecting on their thoughts about 9/11 during the ceremony at the Law Enforcement Firefighters Memorial. And in the third photo, four-year-old Beckett, dressed in blue, puts a rose on the ground in front of the memorial. The event was sponsored by the Upstate Alliance of Realtors Youth Professionals Network. From hard no to hell yes, redistricting gains steam. The article is by Leslie Bonilla Munoz from the Indiana Capital Chronicle. One of Indiana's first Republican lawmakers to declare opposition to mid-cycle redistricting is now a rock-solid hell yes. Seymour Representative Jim Lucas announced his reversal on Facebook and X just 2 weeks after he and his colleagues met with President Donald Trump's administration on redistricting and within hours of the assassination of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. Trump is pushing GOP-led states like Indiana to redraw maps ahead of the 2026 midterm elections to ensure a Republican majority in the U.S. House for the rest of his second term. Redistricting is typically only done after the decennial census. Lucas's endorsement prompted criticism from Kokomo Representative Heath Van Natter, a fellow member of the Indiana House's GOP caucus. "I knew you would fold," Van Natter wrote. "Maybe you should keep your powder dry next time." Lucas replied that he made a damn good case against redistricting and stands by his opposition at the time. He previously called the idea highly unusual and politically, optically horrible and pushed for electoral wins the old-fashioned way. But after the D.C. trip and Kirk's death, Lucas explained, "I have zero problem to publicly come out and explain my changed position." Van Natter responded by quoting Lucas's own words, "hard no and dangerous precedent," back at him, adding, "I assumed that meant that you opposed mid-cycle redistricting, but I guess I don't know what those words mean." He mocked Lucas's phrasing and called the change a real weird and quick flip-flop. Van Natter hasn't made his own position explicit, however. Lucas didn't respond. Instead, on Thursday morning, he posted a lengthy explanation of his reasoning to Facebook. It wasn't the killings of Kirk in Utah or a Ukrainian refugee in North Carolina, he wrote. Instead, it was his own back surgery. Lucas lauded the Indiana Spine Hospital for being physician-owned and patient-focused at lower prices. This is the way healthcare should be. If Democrats take control of the House, he wrote, places like this might go under, and the rest of Trump's reforms will be dead in the water. We owe it to ourselves and future generations to give Trump this reform possibility, because the status quo from both parties is destroying America, Lucas concluded. That is why I'm a hell yes on redistricting. Hoosier House Republicans met to discuss mid-cycle redistricting in mid-August and are set to meet again virtually Friday. Their Senate counterparts caucused Wednesday. Pro-redistricting texts sent by the conservative-leaning Forward America started going out again this week, even as a coalition of voting rights advocates delivered a stack of nearly 9,000 signatures from anti-redistricting Hoosiers. Meanwhile, Governor Mike Braun has pointed out blue states with gerrymandered maps, but has refused to take a firm stance on the topic. He is waiting for legislative leadership to indicate if a special session should be called.
Driver pleads guilty in double fatal. Plea deal calls for 31 years. SUVs speed allegedly 104 miles per hour. By Devin Filchak of the Journal Gazette. A Fort Wayne woman faces 31 years in prison and 30 on probation after she was driving an SUV that crashed, killing her adult sister and a six-year-old girl and injuring two other children. Jordan I. Hudson, 24, was charged with 11 crimes, including two counts of reckless homicide, three counts of neglect of a dependent, including one for causing death. Hudson was driving more than 100 miles per hour when the SUV crashed, rolling several times and ejecting four of the five people in the vehicle near the 320-mile marker on Interstate 69, according to court documents. She was traveling November 23rd with three children and her sister to attend a birthday party. Hudson on Thursday pleaded guilty to the three counts of neglect of a dependent and operating a vehicle causing death. If accepted by a judge, the plea agreement would dismiss several charges, two counts each of reckless homicide and operating a vehicle while intoxicated, and three counts of leaving the scene of an accident. The agreement includes 31 years in prison, 5 years of active adult probation, and 25 years of probation in which she doesn't have to report. She would not be allowed to drive until all probation is complete. Allen Superior Court Judge David Zent is scheduled to decide whether to accept the agreement at an October 6 sentencing hearing. Jaden Samaria Marquis Newbolt, 25, and Nalani Ella Irvins, 6, both died accidentally from the multiple blunt force injuries after being ejected from the vehicle, officers said. A 4-year-old who was not ejected was critically injured, and another 6-year-old had cuts on their head, Deputy Russell Collins of the Allen County Sheriff's Department wrote in a probable cause affidavit. Hudson initially told investigators that Newbolt was driving when the crash happened. Hudson said she was in the back seat with the children because one of them was upset, the affidavit said. When Collins watched body camera footage later, he noticed Hudson told hospital staff that she was driving when the SUV crashed. When Collins contacted the hospital, Hudson had already been released. 4 days after the crash, Hudson was interviewed by investigators and said she was driving the vehicle when it crashed. The group was heading to a birthday party, and Hudson was trailing another vehicle before she got lost, she told police. Hudson told police she and her sister were arguing when she saw the sign for the Auburn and she turned the vehicle around. That's when she lost control of the SUV, the affidavit said. An airbag control module showed that the vehicle was traveling at 104 miles per hour, and the brake wasn't used 4 seconds before the crash, and the SUV was going 106 miles 2 seconds before, the affidavit said. When questioned by police, Hudson said she was driving that fast because she was passing another driver and she didn't know the speed limit, which is 70 miles per hour. Investigators have said Hudson was responsible for the passengers' safety while driving them to the birthday party, and she placed the children's health and welfare in danger by driving at more than 100 miles per hour. If the agreement isn't accepted, Hudson would face a trial and a sentence up to 70 and a half years in prison.
City planners seek feedback on three retail areas. Fort Wayne officials Thursday asked residents to take three surveys that will help shape growth of three retail areas. The surveys are gathering information for South Calhoun Street from Grand Street to Rudisill Boulevard, Wayndale around Lower Huntington, Bluffton, and Old Trail Roads, and East State Boulevard from Spy Run Avenue to Florida Drive, a news release said. Officials are encouraging those who live, work, worship, or shop in those areas to complete the survey, which is online at engage.cityoffortwayne.org/corridor-retail-study. The surveys will be used for a Fort Wayne retail opportunity study conducted by the firm and Access. The study will serve as a roadmap for revitalizing and sustaining retail services in these three districts, the news release said. Strategies from the 2017 Bluffton Lower Huntington Road Corridor Improvement Plan, Historic Northeast 2025 Plan, Southeast Strategy Update, and Packard 2030 plan have been implemented into the study. Community input is an important part of the study, Russ Garriott, senior planner, said in a statement. Hearing directly from the people who live, work, and shop in these areas help us develop recommendations that reflect the community's needs. The study is expected to be completed and available to the public by the end of this year, and the strategies will likely be implemented next year.
Airport highway praised by panel. 7.9-mile expressway lauded for hastening development. By Sherry Slater, the Journal Gazette. Airport expressway paved the way for Fort Wayne and Allen County's growth, local officials said Thursday during a conference devoted to development. The 7.9-mile road has played a vital role in providing direct access to Fort Wayne's International Airport from Interstate 469 since it opened in 2001, conference panelists said. Development in the last 30 years, but really the last 10 years, has just blown up, said Scott Hinderman, executive director of Fort Wayne Airports. He was one of the four panelists to discuss the airport and expressway's contribution to local growth. Greater Fort Wayne Incorporated organized the Economic Development Summit, which drew about 500 people to Memorial Coliseum's Conference Center. Sessions included how economic development depends on education, small business growth, international relations, and tourism. Discussion during the half hour devoted to the evolution of the airport expressway and surrounding fields emphasized the critical role they play in attracting and retaining employers. The session also highlighted the importance of city and county cooperation on infrastructure investments and zoning policies. Allen County Commissioner Rich Beck talked about the need for investments access to water, stormwater, sewers, and roads to make the area attractive to business executives. It's important for the city and county to continue to work together, he said. Companies with headquarters or other operations surrounding the airport include major local employers, BAE Systems, Fort Wayne Metals, Water Furnace International, Amazon, and Indiana University Health. Combined, they employ thousands of local workers. The newest arrival is Van Erden, Food Service, which supplies fresh produce, meat, and other items to restaurants and schools. The Michigan-based family-owned company is investing $50 million and creating more than 100 jobs. Charles Van Erden, the company's president, said the grand opening is scheduled for next month. John Stafford, a consultant who has decades of experience in local development issues, attended the summit but didn't participate in the panel discussion. He said the local Chamber of Commerce was instrumental in securing state funding for the expressway in the 1990s. At the time, existing airport access didn't have high enough traffic counts to get the project into the funding pipeline, he said. It's critical to business executives that their new clients and sales staffs have an easy time traveling from the airport to area locations, Stafford said. Although the connection might not be obvious, he said, the more travelers who fly out of Fort Wayne, the more direct flights the airport can attract. And with the more daily flights, more companies will see Fort Wayne as an attractive place to do business, Stafford said. And more employers means more jobs. It comes full circle, he added. Hinderman said the airport expects to serve 500,000 passengers this year. Ongoing investment in the airport has fueled its growth to the current lineup of 14 nonstop destinations. Our goal, he said, is to make sure we are growing and support the growth in the region.
Smaller towns say inclusion getting better. Press for more by Tony Sandelman of the Journal Gazette. Leaders in small Allen County communities outside Fort Wayne say their inclusion in county affairs is better than 10 years ago, but still needs improvement. Lindsay Preston, chair of the Leo Cedarville Foundation, said a recent county celebration showed her how far the county has come. She was featured Thursday alongside Woodburn Mayor Joseph Kelsey and Hannah Walker, Huntertown Town Manager, for a panel discussion called Stronger Together, Growth Across Allen County's Communities, at Greater Fort Wayne Incorporated's Economic Development Summit at Memorial Coliseum. It's stuff like the Allen County Bicentennial where the smaller communities were not just not forgotten in the planning of the celebration, but that they were invited to the table to be a key stakeholder at the table. These conversations weren't happening a decade ago. Walker said competition in the county has become collaboration. There's been a shift in thinking over the last 5 or 10 years about attracting businesses, which may be a more competitive landscape, she said. We've gone from saying, I want this business to come to my community, to realizing that what enhances this community is focusing on quality of life and quality of place, and that is a much more collaborative conversation. Kelsey said the collaboration has produced results. Collaboration has allowed us to add trails, new and improved sidewalks, and a mural downtown, he said. It's really made Woodburn a place that people are proud to live in and grow. Fort Wayne also plays a role in community growth, Kelsey said. I don't want to discount Fort Wayne, he said. A lot of what attracts people to Woodburn is the fact that it's a 10-minute, 15-minute drive to the ballpark, to the airport, and we use that as a selling point for people who want to commute. And I think that's very important in looking at other communities and making that an attractive point in your community. Preston said the county could do more by understanding small communities' finances. Some think communities should invest in themselves instead of asking for county assistance, but some areas can't. Kelsey said the county has made that kind of help easily accessible. He was once intimidated to ask for county help, but he found the commissioners are open to helping the small communities. Community growth couldn't happen without volunteers, Preston said. I hope there's an understanding in general, she said, about how much volunteers are really pouring into our community as a whole.
Vera Bradley sales dropped 25% in down quarter by Sherry Slater of the Journal Gazette. Vera Bradley Incorporated on Thursday reported a second fiscal quarter loss of $4.7 million, or 17 cents per diluted common share, a $10.4 million swing from last year's second quarter earnings of $5.7 million, or 19 cents a share. The Fort Wayne-based maker of women's handbags, luggage, and accessories also reported $71 million in sales, but a 25% decline from a $94 million posted for the same period a year ago. Ian Bickley, the company's executive chairman, said the 13-week period ended August 2nd showed same-store sales improvement over the company's first quarter. We are in the early stages of making meaningful adjustments to our product design and assortment, driving innovation back into our core DNA and what made Vera Bradley successful, he said in a statement, adding that iconic styles will return. Our assortments will be more balanced across fabrications, silhouettes, and prints. Still, Bickley added, the company has much work ahead to return to profitability. Vera Bradley's losses last year amounted to more than $62 million. The company also signed an agreement to sell bracelet business Pura Vida and, in mid-June, announced several leadership changes that included the departure of CEO Jackie Ardrey. Bickley took an optimistic view in his remarks, however. Planned changes, he said, are all designed to re-engage our local customer base while we are expanding our reach to new market segments.
The following are news briefs for Fort Wayne and Allen County. ACPL marks first year of the studios. The Allen County Public Library is celebrating the year of the studios at the library, a rebrand and expansion of the institution's maker-focused spaces. The studio at Main is in the former Dunkin' Donuts space at the downtown facility. It includes expanded program areas, project workspaces, a suite of new equipment including 3D printers, laser engravers, and vinyl cutters, along with a podcast recording booth. A news release said. From August 2024 to last month, more than 14,500 patrons used the space and participated in programs. In its first 6 months, the podcast booth at the studio at Main has received 282 unique bookings for 566 patrons. These numbers reflect not just usage, but the dedication to entrepreneurship, discovery, and creativity within our community. Kirsten Glass, manager of the studios at the library, said in a statement, "The studios at the library have become a destination where ideas turn into action, where people of all ages can experiment, learn, and create." More information about the studios at the library is available online at acpl.info/studios. Local VA system receives top rating. VA Northern Indiana Health Care System announced Thursday that it has earned a 5-star rating as part of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services 2025 Hospital Quality Ratings. The hospital ratings consider 5 categories: mortality, safety of care, readmission, patient experience, and timely and effective care. A news release said. These ratings highlight the excellent care VA Northern Indiana Healthcare System provides, Executive Director John Bettelshee said in a statement. Our job is to continue raising the bar for customer service and convenience throughout the department so Northern Indiana VA works better for the veterans, families, caregivers, and survivors we are charged with serving. About 77% of VA hospitals receive ratings of 4 or 5 stars, and more than 90% maintained or improved their rating from the last year. Firefighters to help Kroger Food Drive. Firefighters will support local food banks and collect donations for a drive Saturday at 6 area Kroger grocery stores. From 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., firefighters will support food drives at the following locations: Fort Wayne IAFF Firefighters at 10203 Chestnut Plaza Drive, 601 East DuPont Road, and 5725 Coventry Lane in Fort Wayne, and 821 Lincoln Highway in New Haven. Columbia City Fire Department at 621 Countryside Drive in Columbia City. Huntington Fire Department at 2718 Guilford Street in Huntington. The firefighters will distribute shopping lists for customers who would like to provide non-perishable foods commonly needed at food pantries and banks, a news release said. The Firefighters Fighting Hunger event is designed to highlight Hunger Action Month in September.
And now, Nation World Briefs, beginning with Bolsonaro sentenced to 27 years for coup try, by the Associated Press, Dateline, Brasilia, Brazil. A panel of Brazilian Supreme Court justices sentenced former President Jair Bolsonaro to 27 years and 3 months in prison Thursday after convicting him of attempting a coup to remain in office despite his 2022 electoral defeat. Bolsonaro, who has always denied any wrongdoing, can try to appeal the ruling. He is under house arrest in Brasilia. Four of the five justices reviewing the case in the panel found the far-right political guilty on five counts. It makes Bolsonaro is the first former Brazilian president to be convicted of attempting a coup. Bolsonaro's co-conspirators, all former Brazilian officials, were also sentenced for their roles in the attempted coup. U.S. President Donald Trump said he was very unhappy with the conviction. Speaking to reporters as he departed to the White House, he said he'd always found Bolsonaro to be outstanding. School shooter, who wounded two, is dead. A 16-year-old boy who had been radicalized by an unspecified extremist network fired a revolver multiple times during an attack at a suburban Denver high school that wounded two students, authorities said Thursday. Some students ran and others locked down during Wednesday's shooting at Evergreen High School in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. One of the victims was shot inside the school and another outside. The suspect in Evergreen, student Desmond Holly, shot himself at the school and later died, said Jefferson County Sheriff's Office spokesperson Jackie Kelly. The county was also the scene of the 1999 Columbine High School shooting that killed 14 people. Black colleges locked down over threats. A series of reported threats toward historically black colleges and universities across the United States on Thursday led to lockdown orders, canceled classes, and heightened security. Authorities did not elaborate on the type of threats that were made, and no injuries have been reported. Southern University in Louisiana, which reported a potential threat to campus safety on the 8,200-student campus and put students under lockdown for about an hour. At Alabama State University, students were ordered to shelter in place as police searched each building on campus. Clark Atlanta University in Georgia, Virginia State University, Hampton University in Virginia, and Bethune-Cookman University in Florida also reported threats. British ambassador fired over Epstein ties. UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer on Thursday fired the country's ambassador to the United States, Peter Mandelson, over his links to the convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Just days before the arrival of President Donald Trump to the UK on his second state visit, Starmer dismissed the veteran British politician in the wake of the publication of emails that Mandelson sent to Epstein, in which he gave his support to the disgraced financier and when he was facing jail for sex offenses. Belarus frees 52 political prisoners. Belarus freed 52 political prisoners Thursday as part of a deal brokered by the United States, which lifted some sanctions on the country's national airline. It was another sign of possible reapproachment between Washington and Minsk, a close ally of Russia that has faced Western isolation for years. U.S. President Donald Trump and Belarus's Alexandra Lysenko spoke on the phone last month, and the American leader even suggested a face-to-face meeting could be in the works.
We have two more photos from today's newspaper to share with you, and these two photos are part of a ceremony that happened Thursday at the Veterans National Memorial Shrine and Museum on O'Day Road. They unveiled their Global War on Terrorism Memorial. The memorial is made out of Indiana limestone and features three sculptures. First in the center is the Global War on Terrorism Monument. It's made of the limestone and features a carving of the world. And on either side of this memorial are two others. One is titled Operation Iraqi Freedom, and there is a map of Iraq carved into the monument, and the dates March 20th, 2003 and December 15th, 2011 are carved at the bottom. The other memorial is titled Operation Enduring Freedom and features a map of Afghanistan. Two people that are attending the ceremony have their backs to the camera, backs to the camera because they are taking photos of the memorial. The memorial is surrounded by green trees, which brings out the white of the limestone. And in the second photo, there are veterans and community members standing at attention. They're all outdoors. They're standing at attention because the playing of taps is happening at the ceremony. This is a memorial that is meant to honor those who fought in the Middle East wars. Eight arms, but octopuses rely on their front four, study finds. From the Associated Press, Dateline, Washington. Humans may be right-handed or left-handed. It turns out, octopuses don't have a dominant arm, but they do tend to perform some tasks more often with their front arms, new research shows. Scientists studied a series of short videos of wild octopuses crawling, swimming, standing, fetching, and groping, among other common activities, to analyze how each of the eight arms were moving. All of the arms can do all of this stuff. That's really amazing, said co-author and marine biologist Roger Hanlon of the Marine Biological Laboratory in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. Octopus limbs aren't specialized as many mammal limbs are. However, the three octopus species in the study showed a clear preference for using their four front arms, which they did about 60% of the time. The back arms were used more frequently for stilting and rolling that help move the octopus forward. The forward arms do most of the exploring. The rear arms are mostly for walking, said Mike Vecchione, a Smithsonian National Museum of Natural History zoologist who was not involved in the study. Researchers analyzed video clips taken between 2007 and 2015 in the Atlantic Ocean and Caribbean Sea. It was the first large study to examine precise limb actions in the wild. Unlike previous research of octopus behavior in a laboratory setting, the new work showed that octopuses did not show a preference for right or left arms in their natural environment. Results were published Thursday in Scientific Reports. I'm in awe that the researchers managed to do this, said Janet Voigt, an octopus biologist at the Field Museum of Natural History in Chicago, who had no role in the study. Octopuses are shy and elusive creatures. The species studied spend most of their time hidden in dens, meaning that filming them required patience and perseverance over many years. Octopus limbs are complex, used for mobility and sensing the environment. Each arm contains between 100 and 200 suckers. Complex sensory organs equivalent to the human nose, lips, and tongue, said Hanlon. If an arm is bitten off by a predator, as often happens in the wild, octopuses have multiple backups. When you've got eight arms, and they're all capable, Hanlon said, there's a lot of redundancy.
Inflation rises in August, as does joblessness. By the Associated Press, Dateline, Washington. Inflation rose last month as the price of gas, groceries, and airfares jumped, while new data showed applications for unemployment aid soared, putting the Federal Reserve in an increasingly tough spot as it prepares to cut rates at its meeting next week despite persistent price pressures. Consumer prices increased 2.9% in August from a year earlier, the Labor Department said Thursday, up from 2.7% the previous month, and the biggest jump since January. Excluding the volatile food and energy categories, core prices rose 3.1%, the same as in July. Both figures are above the Federal Reserve's 2% target. A separate government report Thursday showed that weekly applications for unemployment aid jumped 27,000 up to 263,000, the highest in nearly 4 years. Requests for jobless benefits are a proxy for layoffs. Recent reports have also shown that hiring was weakened dramatically this year and was lower than previously estimated last year. The data raises the specter of stagflation, a trend that last bedeviled the U.S. economy in the 1970s. The term refers to a period of slower growth, higher unemployment, and rising inflation. It is unusual because a weak economy typically keeps inflation in check. Such a scenario could create major headaches for the Fed as it prepares for a meeting next week, when policymakers are widely expected to cut their short-term rate to about 4.1% from 4.3%. The Fed is under relentless pressure from President Donald Trump to cut rates. At the same time, stubborn inflation while the job market is weakening is difficult for the central bank because they are diverging trends that require polar reactions from Fed policymakers to address. Typically, the Fed would cut its key rate when unemployment rises to spur more spending and growth. Yet, it would do the opposite and keep raising rates, or at least keep them unchanged in the face of rising inflation.
That concludes the news from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette for Friday, September 12th. We will now take a short break and return with obituaries and features from the Weekender section.